Hello, I'm Andrew Tuck and you're listening to Tall Stories on Monocle 24, brought to you by the team behind The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. Seoul is a city of many layers that has dramatically transformed through the years. For this week's Tall Stories, our correspondent in the city, Jason Strother, delves into the history of Seoul to explore what keeps this vibrant city afloat.
Seoul must have a secret power. What else could explain its transformation from a war-torn backwater to an epicenter of technological innovation and cultural creation in just a handful of decades? Whatever this uncanny ability is, it's helped the city bounce back from disaster time and time again. The metropolis has gone by many names. It's only officially been known as Seoul since the mid-20th century, but no matter what it's been called, its fortitude has always remained the same. Today, the South Korean capital is associated with fancy gadgets and popular music, but the city itself can lay down a beat that's more hypnotic than a girl group's latest dance track and packs more punch than an exploding Samsung smartphone, thanks to this hidden strength. Seoul's power originates in its waterways and from atop its granite mountains. It's an intangible, some might say spiritual force, that's been at the city's core since its founding. For 600 years and counting, it's this energy that has made Seoul the most vibrant city on the entire Korean peninsula. Like the two Koreas, the city is divided down its center, with diehard partisans on either side of the Han River. You may already be familiar with the southern half thanks to a certain catchy song with a silly dance. But long before there was a rapper called Psy, there was a monk called Muhak. And instead of singing about the style of the land below the river, Gangnam, the Buddhist geomancer was all about the power of the ground above the northern bank, Gangbuk. As the story goes, Taejo, the first king of the Joseon Dynasty, 1392 to 1910, dispatched Muhak to find a suitable relocation site for the royal capital. Schooled in the ancient knowledge of Pongsu, the Korean version of Feng Shui, the monks sought an area that emitted the kind of energy that would make the new kingdom both prosperous and powerful. When he arrived at the valley, then known as Hanyang, he knew he had found the right place. According to the principles of Pongsu, the balance of wind, water, and earth in a specific area determines its auspiciousness. Hanyang was surrounded by the Imwangsan, Bugaksan, Naksan, and Namsan mountains. The Chunggyecheon stream flowed between them, and the entire area was cradled by the Han River. Shortly after Muhak's discovery, what could be described as a geomancy-centric urban planning project commenced. In 1395, Gyeongbokgung was built at the center of this swath of land, with the royal altar, Sajikdam, and the royal shrine, Jeongmyo, erected to its west and east respectively. Renamed Hansong, the city was encircled by a stone wall. Although these mountains and waterways were meant to bring the capital perpetual good fortune, it didn't always work out that way. Since its founding, the city has had its share of both good and bad luck. Over the centuries, Seoul has been invaded, burnt to the ground, and bombarded. Those walls did a pretty lousy job at keeping out undesirables. For this reason, the Joseon Dynasty didn't take too kindly to strangers, and throughout much of its history, Korea was known as the Hermit Kingdom. Perhaps the most unwelcome visitors were the Imperial Japanese, who annexed the entire peninsula in 1910 and renamed the capital Keijo. Aware of its legendary Pongsu-produced power, Tokyo tore down the palace Gyeongbokgung and built its colonial headquarters on the same site. Independence for Korea only came at the end of the Second World War following Japan's 1945 surrender, and after taking on an old nickname, the city has been known as Seoul ever since. Peninsular division would lead to more tragedy. At the start of the Korean War in 1950, Seoul was captured by the North Koreans, US and Chinese, before it was brought back under South Korean control by the time the ceasefire agreement was signed 3 years later. Many lives had been lost during the fighting, and much of the city was in ruin. Despite its devastated economy, reoccurring political upheaval, and the constant threat of renewed warfare, South Korea defied expectations. Known as the Miracle on the Han, the country used all of its manpower to rebuild, and Made in Korea became a global brand, thanks in part to the Chaebol, the country's industrial conglomerates. Coinciding with the resumption of democratic rule in 1988, Seoul hosted the Olympics that same year, and foreign investment poured in.
To proclaim the 40th Olympic Games in Seoul open.
During the past two decades, the city has reconnected with the sources of its underlying energy. Gyeongbokgung was rebuilt in its rightful location at the foot of Bugakseon. The Cheonggyecheon stream was resurrected after being covered by a highway, and the once overgrown banks of the Han River were turned into bicycle-friendly paths. Even the city walls have been reconstructed along the mountains, but now double as hiking paths and are no longer meant to keep outsiders away. Today, a small bridge that crosses the Cheonggyecheon stream bears the name of the monk Muhak. While his legacy has been overshadowed by a posse of contemporary Korean pop stars, the Pungsu master is still remembered for his discovery of the land that would become Seoul.
You've been listening to Tall Stories, a Monocle 24 production. Our thanks to Jason Struther for today's episode. Remember to tune in every Thursday for the full 30-minute edition of The Urbanist. I'm Andrew Tuck. Goodbye, and thank you for listening, City Lovers.